in the
Well, this, what you're hearing in the background, and those of you who are on audio listening to this, this is from Bishop Freeze is the singer, just like it sounds, F-R-E-E-Z-E. It is from a work called Call to Men that is based out of New York. Ted Bunch, I believe is his last name, was the one I got to hear just last week. And this was a CD made up of issues related to domestic violence that are brought to song and are very, very, very powerful. So I'm going to go ahead and fade that out for us. But it is an incredible... I guess when you think about what he's doing a work, but in our hearts it'd be a ministry. And what his work has involved, apparently now from what I just learned, and I just got to meet this person, talk about a design of God. I had a hope to get to do this talk and it worked out that I could. I found out afterwards that they were bringing in this nationally known, I guess he meets with those that have been the perpetrators and tries to do the rehabilitation. But his bigger goal is to get on the other side of the crime and teach them how to be wise and preventative of this kind of issue coming into their lives and affecting the women that are in their lives. So he's got both goals. Right now he's probably working on the rehabilitative side and has one of the largest nationally known and even internationally known programs for this. And it is, from what I'm just beginning to get a hold of, amazing work. Pray for them. They are looking to have a thing called Men's Institute, which will be, I believe, at least start nationally, to build up regional locations of men and women that are going to help out, especially men, to help out on this issue, that he can come in, train them up, and then they can go back into these communities. Hey, how about going into schools? Hey, how about going into our churches? How about getting to work with all their faith organizations? Getting this message on the other side of the preventative. Hey, how about down to, you might be shocked, but elementary school? Because guess what? I haven't been able to get these statistics. In fact, I got one of my friends here at this event. I want to get this. But the children of domestic violence and how they turn out, the violent acting out that they go through, it's going to cycle. I mean, they don't know what's, you know, right. They don't know what is a good world for their home. So, you know, wouldn't it be great to not only help the ones who don't know anything about it, but the ones who are also in crisis? So there's some amazing opportunities that he's going to get to do. But again, as I'm learning, and I'll give you some more as soon as I do this prayer, but I'm just amazed what we could do as a faith group. Lord, I just thank you, first, for the privilege to be able to share a passion. The privilege to be able to encourage, inspire, and I have a funny feeling I'll get encouraged and inspired too by the men and women here on this really rough idea that a man would strike a woman and now a woman would strike a man, and in the middle of that the children would be abused, the innocence of all three, honestly, being broken. Shattered. Lord, I ask that first you just give us peace in the middle of this storm story. And let us also become more broken in our hearts for prayer for these that we may not know, but yet we would be stunned to find out that we know very well a lot of families and a lot of folks that are impacted by this. Lord, also I give this back to you in the sense of the impact that each of these men and women will have back in their churches and in their communities. And don't let them ever feel overwhelmed or unable. Just one person having a voice on this issue is amazing. Again, we thank you for the privilege to do this talk. In your name, amen.
Thank you.
My name is Roger Acton. I work at the South Carolina Baptist Convention based out of Columbia, South Carolina. And I have, I guess, let's see, this is the 6.5 year working the convention. And I'm not quite sure the exact year, but I believe it's now my 4th year being involved with this issue now of domestic violence. I've kind of finished up the 3rd year and starting in this 4th this fall. Personally, I had not had any aspect of this in my own life. In fact, to give the story kind of a little bit quickly, or short, I guess, element of this, have you ever been at an event to just go and ministry happens? I went to an event on our state capitol grounds. It was a barbecue to say thanks to all the legislators for what, as Baptist Convention people, we felt had been things that had done, just a great connection. And while there, I didn't say this, but I am prioritizing on family ministry, whether single or married, in my work. And knowing that they knew of who I was, one of the key leaders from the convention and a lobbyist for the issue of domestic violence kind of connected with me in a quick moment. Said, Roger, by the way, anyone knows about grants? Grants are really quick. If you get an opportunity for a grant, you have to act fast. And they said, there's a grant that's come up that would allow the Attorney General's Office, SCDVASA, South Carolina Coalition Against Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault, and this convention to be a faith-based representative to triangularly work on the issue of domestic violence in our state. We would work on a priority in the rural area, which would be, let's see, the I-95 corridor. Does that mean anything when I say that? In South Carolina, that area, that's our predominantly nightmarish area. We were 6th, I think now we're 7th, death by domestic violence in our state, in the country. And I didn't know that either. I did the same kind of things. In a barbecue lunch moment, I went from having this kind of, hey, oh, look, the governor, cool, to you're going to go to this meeting because we're going to get this pounded out right now. I had this look, so I had to go quick, get the suit, you know, get in that right mode, and went into this building I'd never been into, basically where the Attorney General's office was, and when they do press meetings, here's the big seal up here. I'm way over my head. And God just opened the door to realize that these men and women need what you're going to give them, and that is to be a faith leader connecting with other faith leaders on this issue. The other thing I got, the wake-up call, guys, guess what? And this is humble because I know this audience isn't all Baptist, but we were probably the last to the table as a faith group. When I got to hear about what was already being done, there is a faith advisory council that SCDVASA has set up. And it has a Muslim imam, the head of the Muslim group in a church. It has the rabbi, a Jewish rabbi. It has Methodist women pastors. And that recording-wise, women pastors, Methodist women pastors. And every element, oh yeah, and the most phenomenal, I'm going to brag on her in this audio, most phenomenal sister of Catholic churches, Sister Margie Hosh, who, guess what, is my mentor now. She is awesome. And if you want a saint alive, I'll introduce you to her. And she's been on this case, and so has a bunch of other these men and women, and they've all been already working on it. So it wasn't like I was coming in to try to pull these faith leaders together. They were already organized, but they hadn't been organized well, connected to what the shelters really were doing, to what all the what was happening in the Attorney General's office. And honestly, there's a law side, but there's also a healing side that the faith group can be a part of. But also, the faith group doesn't even understand how the law part works. So there's this nightmare about when even someone walks into an office, if you're a staff person, and says that someone has either been abusing them, or you find out that you're, and by the way, this is a man or woman, can be now the perpetrator. It's still heavy on the men, you know, being the perpetrator, but there was a case that I heard of where the man actually died by hose. He was strangled by a garden hose. But by the way, I must qualify this because this is something else. As a man leader, I must note this. A lot of times the women who kill men, it's out of all the frustration that has gone on before that. I have to be honest about that. So even the percentage of the actual, what you would think of as a perpetrator, is pretty small. But all this to say, this day came together, the grant was approved, it went through a wild chain of events, and in the middle of it, all of a sudden I'm realizing I'm the state representative of an issue that I have no interest and no understanding, and just barely got a grasp that it's a critical issue now because of what I just run through. I sat in on our first training where we had some faith leaders come and gathered other people together, and by the way, guess what? A lot of faith leaders didn't show up.
Wow.
That's what I said again. I figured, you know, this is such a huge thing. You know, and I sat through the first training, and I don't have any of these pictures to show you today. Maybe one day I'll finally start showing those. But the criminal, police photographs of the victims post-trauma, and stages of bruising. I didn't know. I mean, I kind of knew that you went because of just the bumps, but we're talking horrendous bruising that starts off at one level when you come in, and then they bring them back in a couple days later because some of the hits don't show up until later. I mean, this is not news that I didn't know, and I didn't realize I needed to know, but now all of a sudden I knew, and now I'm like, why are there not tons of ministers coming in here? Because we've got to get all over this. This is the hidden disease within a lot of our churches. Excuse me, pretty much all our churches. It's happening. I mean, it is happening. In fact, what's going to happen, and I'll give you a chance to share this, But every time I do this talk in any way, and my compatriots and the faith leaders, when they share a challenge in their pulpit or in their small group leaders or wherever it is, men and women walk up to them that they could have never imagined that are actually dealing with it. I spoke about this in my own convention, and I had a child victim. I had a friend of a staff person who was killed because of it. In fact, the list was just overwhelming to think how many inside that convention building were somehow impacted by it. Does this make sense? I mean, this is huge. But unfortunately, because it is such a critical issue, and it's kind of a, whoa, how do we talk about this issue? It's not always a dealt issue. So in the work that we've done so far, we've had opportunities to do organizational gatherings that we've tried to bring together faith leaders, but I'm still running the same situation to this date, that there will be three or four people will come to my talk when I have a choice of talks. Oh, hey, kudos. So this is a very packed, good room. But it's hard, though, because the message is not... So what we're trying to do, and one of the things, if things get to continue on, and I'm going to try to encourage it, go to the meetings they already have set up and ask if I can have 5 minutes. Get these people from the shelters. And by the way, tell me what states we have represented here. I wanted to make a note. First off, what states are represented? Just out of curiosity.
South Carolina.
So, okay, we got South Carolina, North Carolina. What else?
Tennessee.
That's right.
Virginia.
Anyone else? Okay. Each one of these, just to let you know, you can write this note down. Excuse me. You want to look up your coalition, and usually it's a sexual assault. I always have to think about this. I don't have my computer to correct me. I think it's AULT. And then domestic violence. Usually they have a combination of those two within their title. But each state, I believe, from what I've heard, has someone, a coalition that is set up to work on this area. I don't know how many of them have faith-organized teams within it. Ours is a faith advisory council. But again, if they don't, and you've got a heart for this, or you now will after this talk, you can help make something like this happen. What I would recommend is if you're in the very, very beginning stage of something like this, and you want to see this happen, and I'm going to just, I may even pull up more paper on this. But Vicki Burris is the director for ours. And she could give you B-O-R-O-U-S, for those that are listening online, listening on to the CD. But Vicki Burris is director for the coalition and heads up overseas, I guess, our Faith Advisor Council. One of our pastors in the area is a president, and they pick those every couple of years. But she could give you some guidelines, some ideas of how to get something like that going if that does not already exist. The elements that came from that work... Unfortunately, like I say, it's not the agenda overall of most churches, but I've enjoyed at least seeing the ahas and ones that once they get it, they're in on it. The thing that I wanted to kind of show you next and let you kind of get a visual of the story behind what I call a lot of these critical issues, and for those on audio, you should be able to hear it pretty well, I hope. Let's see. This is a video, and again, if you want some help to get the word out, by the way, qualify. I don't get any benefits from anything I promote. I just want to get the word out. Wings Like a Dove, Healing for the Abused Christian Woman. This has testimonies. Well, I want to let you see just a little bit. I'll let you see the opening. No, I did not get to bring those up because since it's not my... It was too complicated to try to do a purchasing. So if you want that, make sure somehow before we end this and remind me to make sure I make it audio. Yeah, and we'll make sure I also make it audio so that others are listening. But I'll say how to get in touch with me and then I'll be glad to connect you on that. All right, let's see if this works. The magic of video. I'm going to turn off one of the lights here. This is Wings Like a Dove. Oh, that's too much. I think I'll just do that one.
Lead me on, let me stand, I am tired.
I can do it. Okay, don't go to sleep.
I am weak. I am worn.
The first time there was physical violence, I felt like it was my fault.
I thought that maybe there was sin in my life that wasn't confessed.
Will you keep me up all night and just tell me how ugly I was, how stupid I was?
I loved my husband. I hated the violence.
When I was contemplating divorce, as I felt guilty that I failed God.
My husband told me every day that he was going to blow my brains out and he would kill the kids and kill me.
I struggled with the issue of forgiveness. I thought I had to forgive my husband.
Through the times that my husband would beat me up, I would say, oh, God, help me. And my husband will respond, there is no God for you. And I believed him, you know, because the beatings just continued.
Precious Lord, and lead me on.
These are the voices of Christian women. Women who have loved, who have given themselves to a marriage and been abused by the person to whom they gave their love. Domestic violence is the name we give this sin of abuse, and it is a sin.
Husbands, love your wives and never treat them harshly.
The hurt and fear experienced by an abused woman may be compounded by the reaction of her faith community. For some women, they may be blessed with a community where people have heard her cries for help, have walked with her on her journey, who have tried to stop the abuse. But for other women, that may not happen. Ignorance within the congregation may have prevented people from understanding a woman's cries for help. They may not know that domestic violence includes not only the horrible pain of physical abuse, but also verbal and emotional abuse. And a woman may feel the hurt and pain of abuse, but also abandonment by her faith community. If you have felt this way, this video is for you, for the safety of your children, and for all who care for you.
I'm going to let you listen to a couple of the testimonies just for two or three, and then we'll stop. This is part one. It's not your fault.
Not only is domestic violence a sin, it is also a crime. A crime that happens in every neighborhood and in every faith community.
When I went away to the university, I really wanted to start a new life, and I identified very strongly with the evangelical values that I encountered in the church. I wanted to be a good Christian wife. The first time there was physical violence, I felt like it was my fault. I thought that maybe there was sin in my life that wasn't confessed.
Many of us have committed sins for which we may not have repented. Some of us don't go to church regularly. We don't do all the things we should do as good Christians. But no matter what we may have done or not done, nothing in our behavior justifies abuse. The batterer, not God, is choosing to abuse you.
In my mind, I thought that maybe I did something wrong to get my husband mad at me.
Domestic violence really is about power and control, and it really is about maintaining power and control. That it doesn't happen just because someone gets angry.
See, people don't understand that he doesn't have to hit you anymore. All he has to do is scratch his ear or move a muscle in his hand, whatever his tactic is to firm.
Is that not amazing? Just emotion towards what he has done. Just one lady told me that it was just one time it happened, and in that one time it happened, any time he moved his hand in that direction, basically above his head, she just, I mean, her whole stomach, her whole body just shattered inside every time that action, or the words, the volume of his voice would move to that level that it was when it happened. It just doesn't go away. It doesn't just, even if it's just one time, it doesn't go away. I mean, it's in their system. Now, translate that into the age of a child when it happens to them. I mean, you talk about that, you know, lasting impression. I mean, that's what, again, what she's saying is, to me, the part that broke me, it's not even the hit, it's all the things that go around it before the warning that he's going to, one day he might do something to her, and then when he does, after that, she's just constantly on edge. And she will do anything to avoid it, and do all the things that she would probably never do just because she doesn't want to have that experience again. The other thing I want to bring out is, as we're going to close off this video part, we have got to be ready to listen. Because when they come in, finally, and trust me, it's taken everything in their body and mind to get to you guys when they walk in. You've got to be ready to give them attention. I'm trying to remember if it was in this situation or my internet talk, but there was this comment about a teenager who said, "I'm not your 2 o'clock appointment. I am not the one that's going to take care of your time before you get to go to your next appointment. And when you're done with me, that you get to close that or write off that or delete that and then move to your next part of your day. I am not your 2 o'clock appointment. I'm a life with a hurt and I need help." And I was like, whoa. You know, Tim and I, when we were talking last night, I felt like, you know, the comment that you shared about the involvement you have with these people, we've got to be involved with these folks. Because they're walking in, and it's not a good day. Now, it might have been a better day, but it's not a good day. Yesterday is what they're walking in about. Give me some comments back. I just want to get some feedback. What is your perspective on this? What is it that has maybe even drawn you in to want to hear about this? Is there some aspect that in your ministry you already began to work with some folks who are going through this crisis?
Mine was... Well, I'm the product of a child of domestic violence, and what that created in me was to be violent. So at the time until I broke the cycle of saying, "I'm going to get past this," that was really mean. And I wasn't mean to the point of just striking out just to be striking out. If I saw someone abusing you, they were going to get it. And then I learned that
the protector.
Now I'm a predator. And it became a thing of... I would protect anyone that I felt like was going through that. But then when I gave my life back to the Lord, He was like, no, now you're acting the same way as the previous person. So I began to, my eyes were open and I began to hear differently. And I began to hear recently women in the church who are leaders in the church, and the comments that they would say, the language was so familiar, and it was simple stuff. You could hear the pain when they would talk about it with someone else, and people just didn't catch it. But in my mind, I was,
you knew.
Wow, they were. Are you serious? Yeah. And I would see their husband and joke with them and talk with them, and I'm like, are you serious?
Well, and what you just brought out is another part of the ministry. Folks often come out of hurt into their ministry. Not necessarily, you know, you don't want to mark everyone with that, but there's a hurt somewhere in there that they realize they want to protect, help, and make sure it doesn't happen to another. And the same with, like I said, when I did do these talks, everyone that came into that last talk I did had been some level of domestic violence in their life and were trying to help. They'd gone where you'd gone. They had Christ now, and they didn't want to destroy that was destroying others, but they wanted to find a way to help. And sometimes, here's another tough part for our faith organizations. A faith organization, knowing that that's existing, as one lady said, it actually became a reason that she lost her opportunity to continue to minister, because they were concerned about that personality, the negative side coming out, or that she would talk too much about it and it didn't make sense. But for whatever reason, she ended up losing her job there unofficially because of that. And so my heart aches, because if we can't put the crisis out there, now you have to be careful. And anyone who's a counselor, anyone a counselor in here? The counselor side, you know, you really obviously can't put who you are out in front of the people when you're talking with them. Same with ministerially. You don't say, "By the way, I can relate." But you have to be careful what you put out there for the sake of the encouragement. But what you just know now is that we do need to be sensitive and alert. And those reactions and buzzwords, you may not get initially an opportunity to say something, but now you know at least to pray for them. And in fact, I think right now my biggest heart to y'all, first off, is just to pray for these folks. Because there's a lot of them that you're not realizing, and like I said, you need to start praying and let God be the protector part. Then when you get the opportunity to talk, then you'll get to do that.
I guess what I would like to learn is what you just said, how you pick up on cues that most people don't even hear.
It's a sound of pain, but it is covered up by laughter and joking and teaching someone else. But I really can't describe it. But and this particular individual that sits to my heart, she spends a lot of time. They like you said, they work in a ministry with people who've already gone through it or are going through it, because she spends a lot of time with abused children, teens who are misunderstood, and I never paid it any attention. Until one day we were just in a group meeting and she just brought it out and was saying that, you know, we have to pay attention to abused children, and I could see the pain. Personal pain, and you could hear it, and I was like, wow. And then as I began to, that opened my eyes to watch, and then I would notice how she would sit and how she would quiet herself, you know. I noticed it then.
I pray for an opportunity for you to talk to her. Be a little bit honest, but be very private. Be respectful, but just say there's something that resonates with you. And be honest. Maybe if you feel like you can talk to her about your situation, if she wants to, then she can. Lester, go ahead.
Yeah, you know, you hear about abused women outside of the church. But then when you hear it inside of the church, it hurts. Because inside of the church, it's like a time bomb. Because these people could explode. Anytime.
Well, but on the other side, I want to make a great comment, because the outside of our church, you want to, I always kind of laugh at this thought, but when we think of outreach, we think about generally knocking on a door, bringing cookies, you know, welcome to the neighborhood things. But if you put a notification of bringing in, say, a local shelter, you know, those that know what's going on can do a talk on it. You as a minister can give that ministerial perspective of what the church is doing to be involved with such an issue, and make that in a local community type center where the community knows about it, it's promoted, you get certain storefronts to put up signs about it. You promote that in your community. Tough outreach, because what you're going to get, be ready. You're going to get some tough situations inside your church. But if you want to do an amazing form of outreach, you start doing those kind of things in your community, the community is going to go, wow. Because, by the way, like I said, unfortunately, the faith groups aren't doing as much as I'd love to see. Some are doing more. But if your church was involved in something like that, you'd get a wake-up call to your community that this is something that a church that really cares. Because to care about the easy things, or, you know, the not messy things are one thing, but to care about the things that are really messy and not easy to talk about, that'd be awesome.
Let me ask this question. You know, you go to a session, you're being trained to handle this situation. But deep down inside you, it's not a hunger or a thirst to really reach out to people. How that works?
Take a moment and go to a shelter. Ask the folks if you could come by. Set up an appointment. Don't just go by randomly. Call up, get the time. Say you want to help out on a certain project they're going to be doing with some families. Maybe even do an overnight where you might have a chance to come in, like they'll call you on a cell phone. We're going to have to extricate some children out of a home tonight. Go with them when they do that, and you'll never be the same again. we took the time to take our daughters along with a whole box of bunch of clothing that my wife had organized, and took it to one of the shelters just recently, and brought the girls with us to begin to let them know that the reason why we're bringing the clothing here is that these children literally come in pajamas or whatever their night clothes are, and brought there in the middle of the night with nothing. I mean, just that whatever is on their body, and the parents, of course, are split to wherever whether jail or another shelter or whatever, and there's this immediate separation with no answers. And by the way, this is not big kids. There was a baby in the shelter. And four sisters were also in this one shelter. This will break your heart. If it doesn't, then you need to go to Jesus and say, can you help me? But this will break your heart. You may not, you know, some people though, to be sincere also, you may not be able to go and be a part of something like this, because this is kind of like the person that can't go into a surgery room because they can't stand blood. This issue is so harsh and violent and unpredictable and doesn't have boundaries that it might be too much for some people. And that's one of those things where I call this a call of God if you're going to get involved with this.
And you can help with this issue in all kinds of ways. It doesn't have to be the exact hands-on.
Right. I mean, you can, you know, going back to the prayer thing, you can just have a prayer team that's lifting up the group of people that you know are in that arena.
Yeah.
You can provide the finances, you can provide the clothing.
I have a friend that's working on a project where she gets, you know, when children are removed from the home, a lot of times they don't have time to get things. Not even a teddy bear or anything like that. So she's working on a project to give each child a bag of their own with a stuffed animal inside.
And what you just said is huge, of their own. Everything of theirs just got left behind, and in some respects, the association with what's left behind, they don't really want to get in their hands. So something that's new, that shows that someone cared, it's huge. That's why we also do this for our daughters. I feel sometimes, you know, we're not wealthy, but we're very blessed. And I just want them to get it, that this is what they just got in his room and what they have. This is it. And so the reality was good. I don't know, but I think the older one got it. The 9-year-old got it.
Do you have any literature, because I know I'm very interested in this, and I know someone personally right now that is going through this, and it's not just, or it's just not a one-time, it's a journey with them.
Yes.
Because their mindset, they're so beat down, it's their fault. Mm-hmm. They did nothing.
But it's not their fault.
Right. But to get them, I mean, you're months, they've been walking with somebody for months, and to help them, but they'll stay there, mm-hmm. because it's Christian. God hates divorce. And, you know, they're just so blinded and beat down. And but God is not, you know, behind that abuse. And but like that woman was saying, they keep looking for, am I doing something wrong? Did I do something initially to cause this? Because if, maybe if I could change that,
right,
it would cause them to be different. Maybe if I stick it out, they'll change.
The maybes kill them.
Yeah.
The maybes just wear them down.
And it is. It's a journey to help them. But you can't convince them. You can say, you can throw out scripture, you can talk hours and hours and hours. Do you have any literature, I mean, anything to
I'm going to give you something that will give you some resource connections.
Yeah.
I'll make a verbal of it for right now too, for those that can't get this packet since it's an audio. But the Faith, let's see, Faith Trust Institute. Go online, Google that, however you get to it. They have resources completely geared towards domestic violence and sexual assault that are geared towards helping faith leaders minister in this cause. In fact, I'm going to show you a portion, show you some PowerPoint information that is a free downloadable that they have promoted, and it also, I think this came out of, there's like a link to it, but I think the Catholic Church put this PowerPoint together. But Faith Trust Institute gives you some resources that you can use as a ministering part to help out in this issue. You're talking to your coalition, usually gives you the folks that can help talk with the persons who are victims. They have all kinds of recovery type elements. Plus they can tell you who are the counselors, because there maybe needs some need for counseling too. If there's a need to get her to a safe house, they'll also know how to work that.
But you can't intervene, right? You cannot like personally go move that person.
Well, here's the big thing, and this is the part where I feel like I devalue myself. I'm not the person in the middle of that system, so I'm not the expert on all the things that you have to do. But what the key things I've learned is, you need to be very safe yourself, because the hard part, and the reason why, if you haven't figured this out, why most faith people aren't involved, is because they've heard about the minister who got killed by the perpetrator who didn't get it. Why the guy came by? He thought he was like the future boyfriend, or he thought he was going to get outed by this guy, and they just killed him. I mean, you know, the crisis issue moves into another point of view of, oh, I could die for this job. And unfortunately, we could die, hopefully, in a lot of situations if we're really taking a stand for Christ, but some men and women aren't ready to sign up for that page. So my comment is, you have to, backing down to the lesser issues, you just have to be very safe when you meet with them. Make sure that you've got a shelter group that you're working with to know that if you even discuss the idea of going to another place, that you have that option. Because if they start to make the move, and then they, and he finds out, in this case, being the he, things could escalate inside that home. If she begins to show to him that she's going to try to get him prosecuted, again, things can escalate to death. Apparently, from what I'm understanding, things escalate way past what you and I would have as a boundary. I mean, at best, I can see myself really angry, but not to the level that these men are going to.
The most dangerous time for the woman is after she's gone.
Well, see, and that's the thing. That's why, unfortunately, the other thing that's happening, too, is that when they finally go to trial, people don't understand why in the world, when she gets in that trial, does she start to not say the things that she said when she was in that, you know, police officer or police station? Because, yeah, she's scared for her life. She's scared for her children. She doesn't, the hope of what's next isn't clear. So, unfortunately, you and probably in each of your states have heard too many stories. I mean, it's ridiculous. You can easily get a domestic violence story on your news station about once a week at least, and that's, you know, just so they get caught in their storyline.
You know, when people get married, it's for better or for worse.
Hmm.
We can take all these things in their mind and say, hey, I got this thing.
Well, guess what? Another element that you can add to your faith plan for as a leader helping couples get married. And you brought this out, Lynn, very well. Look into them and listen to them and begin to see, when you ask them about how they deal with conflict resolution, How are they responding? What is that future wife or future husband saying about the way they manage it? Listen for those issues of, you know, does it, how far does it go? What are the boundaries they have in their conversations? Do you hear signs of maybe extreme verbal abuse that's gone on? You know, premarital counseling could take a whole other perspective if we really let ourselves think about, are we going to try to help this couple if we see signs that this could be a much more critical issue on the other side of the rings?
I wanted to add something. A good way that, this just came to me while you were talking, a good way to learn the signs, if you don't know anyone, is by volunteering. You might not be able to help the way you would want to help at the shelter, but you can be very observant to learn the behavior, and that will open your eyes up to what's around you.
That's critical. The more you see, hear, and listen to their stories.
I saw a video a couple of weeks ago, and they said that there was actually pastors, after the woman did get away, she went to the safe house, and the pastor brought the man to the safe house.
Oh, wow.
And showed him this is where she is.
Oh, wow.
So somebody comes to you and shares as a minister, as a layperson, keep them safe. Don't, you know, just because they were trying to get them back together. That is not God's will.
Right. And our heart is geared towards design, and we want to bring a couple back. But there's got to be some... Pray for extra wisdom, because there's a time and place for that. And it may need to be a little bit longer if we've got some issues that are not resolved, especially if that perpetrator is still in the same mindset. There's not been any... what's amazing, again... Like I said, we're not in this kind of thinking, but there's usually a lot of, there's limited remorse. In fact, it's all part of his way of thinking that he's supposed to be. It's his design. And that's what the call to men is getting after. You know, we hype up what a man is supposed to be. You know, this macho intense, back down on nothing, don't ask for directions, just everything is our, you know. And even that funny, don't ask for directions, don't ask for help to know how to do something right, kind of fits into that. And so we got that whole nature, and yet we get upset at the fact, why did they just do that? Well, they've been programmed into an intense version, and like I said, some of these guys have had no boundary on how intense they're supposed to be. No one gave them that heart boundary. I meant to bring tissues, and I knew I should. I'm sorry. This is one of my tissue talks.
No, it's Alice in my house.
Okay. That's my...
I'm sure.
Okay, well, make sure.
Thank you.
We're looking out. By the way, again, for the audio, this is When I Call for Help, and it's a statement of the U.S. Catholic bishops. Yeah, it's kind of weird. I'm a Baptist. But I've realized that there is some amazing men and women who figured this stuff out. And like Sister Margie... I'm going to keep learning from them. Because, by the way, this is getting at the heart of what we want. I mean, you know, if you want to have a witnessing opportunity, you be a part of these lives, and they, for some crazy reason, will listen to you. I'll just let you read that. Oh, that's right. For those, I impaired and hearing impaired. For the sake of, we'll do this. In the beginning, I was young. He was handsome. He said I was beautiful, smart, worthy of love. Made me feel that way. And so we were married, walking joyfully together down a church aisle. Our union blessed by God. Then came the angry words, the verbal tearing apart. Now I was made to feel ugly, unintelligent, unworthy of any love. God's or man's? Go ahead.
So when they, because I've read some about domestic violence online, so it's not just the physical beating, but it is the verbal, the emotional abuse.
You're good on this. Let me go ahead. You're giving me a perfect transition because I was trying to see when I was trying to say somewhere in this opening part. Let me tell you the four types. And by the way, this is something you can download from Faith Trust. I just got an update on this, and I like the way it's just very succinct. The first one is, not necessarily in any order, but here's the one you all probably tend to think of. Physical assault includes shoving, pushing. By the way, when I get my email, if you want, I can email this to you. So if your hand cramps, just email. I'll email this. Pushing, shoving, restraining, hitting, or kicking. Physical assault may occur frequently or infrequently. Like I said, sometimes just at one time, and the rest of it's all hand gestures. But in many cases, they tend to escalate in severity and frequency over time. By the way, these videos and information tend to think about this as being on the other side of marriage. If you really listen to your news stories, most of these are live-in boyfriends. You know, it could even be an ex that just didn't get what he thought he deserved and came back in. This doesn't just happen with the man and woman in the room. Usually there's children somewhere nearby. Sometimes they come out of the bedroom when they hear mom and dad yelling and get caught in the crossfire, literally, of the issue. So again, I'm sorry, I get chills when I say that part. The second type is sexual assault. And it's at any time one partner forces sexual acts that are unwanted or declined by the other partner. By the way, the concept of date violence is huge also. And again, these are issues that, if yours doesn't, let me know, but there's information within our state through some of these shelters and coalitions on just on that one issue of date violence. We had a situation where a girl who was a teenager, she was lifeguarding, she had broken up with her boyfriend who had been abusing her physically, probably some verbal too. He came to the pool where she was lifeguarding and killed her at the pool. You know, father of a 7 and 9 year old, I had been concerned before I got involved with this with just the basic issues of dating. Just, you know, breaking up at my level, you know, just that, oh, I don't get to date him or her anymore. This is a whole... it's amazing.
I might have all these thoughts while you're talking, but for some reason, quickly, to the God thing, some sins of unconfessed whatever, God does not allow anything to come upon us unaware. So most of the time, no, all the time, there are signs. But a lot of people, we don't know. We're uneducated.
Denial.
Exactly. And so the signs come and we keep right on going until the actual evidence of the warning that was sent to us are now manifesting. And then we go back. They go back and they say, well, I deserve this. Because they can remember the warning signs. Mm-hmm. And at that point, it's not a disciplinary action by God. It's basically a recognizing what He was trying to tell us that we get back on the right track.
I'm going to hand this out again. I'm going to go ahead and give my contact information. I keep saying this, and these people on the audio are going, "Give me the contact information." It is Roger Acton, ACTON. My phone number is that'll be easier. It's 803-765-0035, extension 4622.
Acton,
ACTON. Sometimes action slides in there. My dad was Dr. Action, as a bone surgeon. But let's see. Oh yeah, email Roger Acton, ROGERACTON @ SC, South Carolina, scbaptist.org. Roger Acton @ scbaptist.org. So if there's any information that either you all need or those that are listening, please contact me. I will be glad to connect. And what I just gave out for those listening is it's Getting Out of Dangerous Relationships card, and it lists the name of the organization that we work with, Safe Harbor Crisis Line. And on the back it gives, is dating violence a problem? And it has some facts, warning signs, and that's what you're asking for, Keith. It just gives some helpful perspectives of, well, your partner embarrasses you or makes fun of you, your partner puts down your goals or accomplishments, your partner uses intimidation or threats to get their way, your partner treats you roughly, partner blames you for how they feel, that's a pretty intense one, your partner pressures you sexually, your partner uses drugs or alcohol as an excuse for how they treat you. You know, again, like you said, Linnell, we've got to be alert, but we need to start helping our kids, our young adults, about these. And by the way, now we're moving into the world where boomers and the older end of the boomers, seniors are coming back into new relationships. And guess what? You could probably have this talk in your senior adult ministry. If sin exists in that person, and that's universal, this can be a problem. And it just, like I said, manifests itself in different ways. Any more comments? Yes, Lester.
So dating is very important.
So what is?
Dating? Yeah, it's very important because you're building a relationship and you want to be careful. Because sometimes, you know, young people get head over heels.
No. I have to tell you, my mom, when my dad passed on, she got head over heels. I mean, but the thing is, you've got to be wise, because head over heels takes you out of the thinking part. All that wisdom that you came into that relationship with goes... and I don't know if that showed up on the audio, but it's gone. And So, you know, going back to where I keep hearing all you say, you've got to remind them of their grounding in Christ. And hey, how about pray over your date before you go out? Not with your date person, on your own. Get a couple people. Accountability.
Yes.
You know, again, this is a world that, in my going out, I don't think I ever told anyone, by the way, I'm going to go take so-and-so out, ask me how it went. But in this new world, I feel like that's the kind of world I'm going to try to train my daughters into, is that when you go on a date, past you're living in my house, I want you to have a friend that knows where you're going. Just the basic concepts. Or at least has a cell phone, knows how to get in touch with you. Because we've moved into a world where there's a lot less trustful situations. And that leans into a little bit of my second talk today on internet safety. But we've got to be really wise as a serpent and gentle as a dove in our interactions in this arena. Let me go ahead and keep showing you a couple of these things. And by the way, again, like I said, I started to say this is found in the Faith Trust Institute, but this is found under the National Organization for Bishops website. And again, if you have any trouble finding it, let me know. But this is a free downloadable PowerPoint.
You know, this is, I don't know if this really applies or something, but you said this, when you're talking about the Catholic Church, just different things, you know, as children of God, we've all got things we've got to do, regardless if you're Baptist or whatever, but we've got some friends of ours that are Jehovah's Witness.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things with Jehovah's Witness that they do is, and we've been to both of their kids' weddings, but their oldest daughter, whenever she went on a date, when she reached the age where they felt she was, you know, ready to start dating, 15, 16 or whatever, her younger brother, that was like 3 years younger than she was, wherever she went, even if they said, hey, we're just going to run to the pizza place and come back, he had to go with her. If he wasn't around, she couldn't go. She couldn't be anywhere with another guy unless the brother was there. And that was part of the way their denomination was set up, oh, yeah, with the chaperone. And then when he got to the point of dating the girl that he was dating, she had a younger brother. And if you don't ever have a younger brother, then they would find cousins. But they would always find someone
in the family
that was younger in the family that became that that accountability, that chaperone. And then it was real neat, because when they got into when they got to the point where they were going to get married, you'd have the father of the bride would walk down, the father, and they'd say, you know, who gives this wife? He said, I do. And then they would make part of the service was, now we release you as the, you know, the accountability, the chaperone, we release you from your
duty.
So, I mean, it was something with, like I said, they started dating at 15 and went all the way up until, I mean, she was in her early 20s, I think, when she got married. So he was with her 7 years. And you know, he didn't complain about it. I mean, we never heard him complain about it. It was just something he said, you know, this is something we do, because I don't ever want my sister to get in a position, you know, that she can't get out of.
Wow. I mean, I know we'd have some teens complaining, but wouldn't that be an amazing opportunity for, say, accountability? And like I said, you know, this is one of those things that's, you know, a branch of this talk easily, you know, the parenting side of this strategy, the parents have to be involved with this plan. If we find a way as faith leaders to come in and challenge our young people about this, my preface to that meeting is to have a very intense, honest comments with your parents first. Don't do this talk with your kids first. This is a parent talk first. Some parents may even say, I'd like to not have my children at this talk. You know, and obviously, you know, you're going to grade it down to something that's not going to be as shocking as it might be for older folks. But you would really want to make sure you talk with your parents first. Because if the parents aren't on board on this, it's going to be also very difficult. Because they've got to have some kind of strategy and be a part of that plan. By the way, wouldn't it be awesome for a child to know that the parents are involved in this part, in a sense of looking out for them? I know there's an annoyance initially thinking about the boundaries that are going to come up, but ultimately I think you'd have a lot of thank yous on wedding days. So I think it'd be very, very incredible. This is going to cover some of the things we've talked about. Oh, I didn't finish. We got a good question. We have a great group. This is awesome. We covered the first one was physical abuse. The second one was sexual assault. The third basic type of domestic violence is psychological assault. That includes isolation from family and friends, forced financial dependence. That sounds kind of like, well, we want them to grow up. Well, but if you do it on a forced basis, verbal and emotional abuse, threats, intimidation, and control over where the partner can go and what she can do. And sometimes, like I said, very few can be he, but usually it's the what she can do. This one is harder to pin down. you won't get a person put in prison for just this, because it's hard to, you just, it's a he said, literally she said moment. But the damage is just, if not worse, because it's you don't see bruises 3 days later.
Internal.
Right. It's all internalized. Well, in fact, it comes out later in their own lives unless there's someone helping them. That's one of the persons that I got to talk with shared that his was because of a father and then a stepfather just verbally just destroying him over and over, just minimizing every value he had. The fourth one on this one is attacks against property and pets. Destruction of property that may include household objects or treasured items belonging to that victim. I mean, just think about it. If they can't get to you, they'll get to things that are important to you. And, of course, hitting the walls or abusing or killing beloved pets. And if you think again about news stories, sometimes you hear about that. I mean, that's a secondary one. I'm trying to remember if this seemed like there was a situation where an actual horse was killed out of a vicious retaliation to that woman. Again, some people might think, well, that's not so big deal. It's just a pet. But it's the intent behind it and what the potential next escalation could be.
Okay, and if it's not brought, that's... What we do is we allow those things. Like, so it's no big deal.
We minimize it.
I mean, I remember years ago when I first got out of the Corps, Marine Corps, I was living up in Oxford, Michigan, coaching football up there in a little community. It was just a real small community. And the lady, the husband started off, and it was just, he'd shove her and he'd cuss at her and different things like that. And she'd call the police. And like, well, you're married, you should tell her parents. Like, well, honey, people have arguments. Nobody took her serious. Mm. Well, then the next time, he beat her, put her in the hospital. So, she called the police. Well, then same thing when the police showed up, and then they were getting ready to press charges. The husband came in, oh, I'm so sorry. You know how much I love you. So she didn't press any charges.
Right.
Nobody again took it serious. It was just an argument that got out of hand. Mm. Well, then the next time, it got even worse. Well, then... Finally, after so many times, the cops have been called in every time making reports, but they would never do anything, really to him. They'd always release him. Then he showed up, and he killed her dog, and then he pulled her car with an axe, and all these things. And it was just one thing after another. Well, finally, it got to a point after like 2 or 3 years. Finally, one day, he walked into her office. She was a dental hygienist, and he walked in the office right in front of the dentist and the patient and killed her. And then walked back out and then pleaded insanity. When the cops caught him, he pleaded insanity. And I'm like, you didn't see this coming?
Yeah.
I mean, all
the stages and steps.
And we need to take those things, even if it's just the little arguments and stuff, they need to be taken seriously and they need to be addressed.
Well, and this is the other arena that has come into play, and our state did this last year. Corporations need to start getting involved with this, because what's happening is people think that it's only happening inside the house, domestic violence. But it's actually happening now in the workplace too, as you just described, the lifeguard, this story, and yet we don't, again, set up an arena to assist, make alert what could be a potential problem. So again, what the trick they came up with was, and I think it was Walmart is involved with this, and I'm going to say right now it's a statewide event. I haven't heard this nationally, but they have put information first as a stand for their cause inside that corporation. Every bathroom in Walmart and every dressing room in Walmart has this little sign up about it in women's restrooms, women's changing room areas, and it has tear-off sheets at the bottom that are just little things that you could, by the way, the size is to fit in a shoe. Because if they were found, because believe it or not, these men will go through their purses and see what they have. And if they found that piece of paper in their purse, big flyer, trouble. So they make it about the size of the shoe, so they can keep it in their shoe and keep it, then get to what they need to get to for the help. But the thought was, as Walmart did this, corporations can put this in their women's restrooms, can put this wherever that break area is that's private for that woman, the bathroom stall, whatever it is, so that those women can begin to get to the help that's available. The other side of the coin too is and I don't know if it's an HR, I guess this would be an HR thing, HR people would be involved with this so that they would have a strategy of what to do in case of a problem. If the woman saw the man and knew that this was not good, could there be some kind of a safeguard element? Sometimes corporations have checkpoints, so maybe that person wouldn't get in as easily, but other times, because they're the spouse of the one working, security people tend to say, oh, go ahead. So again, the system has to be set up, and it has to be something that everyone's involved with. So again, even the corporations now are realizing they need to get out on this. I can't say because I can't remember well, but there was at least two or three major national corporations that had seen this as a value. So it's beginning to get that level of interest or involvement. And again, this is amazing to think that you have to think about now. Domestic violence has moved into the business workplace or workplace. But if we're not alert to it, you know.
Well, then that involves our churches too. When we become aware of a situation, and both parties are attending church,
mm-hmm.
you know, your ushers, your door greeters, everybody needs to be alerted to that, even though it. You know, you want to respect their privacy, per se. You don't want to jeopardize anybody else's safety.
Well, and you've hit the other one that I won't go into, but and I know one of my folks at the state office can help out a lot on if you need this done, but the whole protecting our children. You know, the system that allows you to it's not going to stay, is it? No. The system allows you to set up a system of pickup of your children, because sometimes in those situations you don't want to have that spouse also be involved in that. But the church leaders all have to be made alert of that. I mean, it really takes a whole church to take care of that issue. I'm going to switch because I want to move to this children part here.
What caused wanted to against their loved one that much? You know, you love somebody. And then all of a sudden.
Well, what Tim just described, it spirals. It probably start off with, and there could be some other behaviors in behind it. I mean, that's the counselor answer. I'd have to actually bring in Mr. Counselor. Please come in, Ms. Counselor. But the thinking is, there's some rudimentary elements in that person's life that has kind of come together. But unfortunately, as each have noted, it starts out with something that you don't really think is that bad. But they don't have boundaries like you and I. You know, we would hit a point of maybe a big fight yet by words, and we might just stop there, and that scared us because we saw how he or she got. You know, when I've gotten upset at my daughter, I hadn't thought about how much, about 2.5 heads high, coming down with my voice, just looking at her, and coming out with the most intense roar, what that does. And then you think about it, and in adults when we do that, we don't realize until we see it, then we go, because I just realized how much I could shatter a person by just being upset, and I didn't realize how upset I was. You know, my daughter says, don't give me your angry face. Well, I think a lot of spouses and relationship people, they don't want to see the angry face, but they don't know how to stop the angry face. It started out something little, and it gets really way out of control.
Well, and a lot of it too, you know, you're talking about how you and I were talking yesterday. I mean, you're doing the domestic stuff. Part of what we're doing is the drug side of it. Mm-hmm. But the two connect, because that's normally where a lot of that comes from is you know, the drugs, the alcohol, something like that. And the hardest thing that we've seen with a lot of them starts off with prescription drugs. Mm-hmm. You know, a person's struggling in one area with something, I mean, depression or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they get on some type of medication and it alters their mood swings and, you know, things like that. So it's, you know, you may have couples that have been married for 20 years, and then all of a sudden this type of thing happens because the guy's been, you know, he hurt his back at work, and the doctor puts him on some medication he's never really been on, and the morphine sets him into a mood swing difference, and he don't really know it, and something like that happens. I mean, it's just, you know, there's a lot of different things, and like I said, I mean, counseling is important in the churches and in the workplace and stuff, being able to sit down and talk to people, and that's the thing, is people don't feel like there's anybody that they can go and talk to and share those things with.
And at that point is when they really need us. I mean, I know we want to make sure they get into their Sunday school room and they do their discipleship week thing and they come to this fellowship, but that's when they really, really need us, and that's unfortunate when we step away because we're not sure what to do.
It's like you said, I'm not your 2:00.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we make everybody an appointment when we need to make everybody. Look, my time is clear. My focus is completely on you, and you know, that's what they need to have.
Mm-hmm. Yes, ma'am.
One thing that I've noticed, and I was one of those, like I said, aggressive type people, so I just didn't pay anything. It was my way, and this is the way it was going to go. But now, being more humble, I'm noticing things about the men that are around me, like you said, what could make them change. And little things that you just made me aware of, I'll notice someone that push, you know, like a little pushing thing, like, sit down. And then I actually heard someone say this yesterday, and I noticed that now that you brought it out, it's like, sit down. And then they turn around and say, you know what? And we're all Christians. And it's like, you know what? You almost made me curse you out. And when I heard that, I was like,
you know what I'm saying? You're like, that's in you? Wow, just for that little bit. But see, and that's... But the other side is too, you know, we need to also let people know that that is pushing, that's crossing a line. Because some people are brought up in that, you know, a parent, maybe dad always said, you know, come on, son, and pushed them just to, you know, that was a literal pushing. And so that's how they act. And they don't just do it to a child, they do it to their friends, but they don't realize that's a boundary cross.
And then it goes to another level, because that push was like 2 weeks ago, and I never thought about it until you just said it. But then it connected with me, like, yeah, he did tell her. You know, he almost made me curse
you. Oh, too. I got
to hang out in the Christian group, and I'm like, now, I know, I used to curse like a villain. That's not in me. So what would make, and it was very simple what had happened. A drink was spilled. And it was like, you know what? I'm going to curse you out. And it was saying such that so complacent. So I never paid any attention until he went over the sections of it, and it just escalated to me.
I gave you here the first thing I want to point out, and for those that want to get this from me, you can email me who are listening to this CD. This first page, the blue one, and by the way, I did not plan this. It came out pink and blue. It's just, I even randomly was stuffing this. I went, oh, well, it's cute. But Faith Leaders Advisory Council, I went ahead and included this. I think maybe I'm the only one from South Carolina. No, you're from South Carolina. But the rest, though, still, if you need some content, contacts like Wilmot Merchant. Man, Wilmot, again, if your heart isn't broken yet over this issue, Wilmot will break your heart over it. He will tell you the frontline stories as a pastor in his church when he first started preaching and started letting people know that this was his concern, how the world just kind of came to him as a need for help and realized that that man cares. I even have Sister Margie down here who I mentioned on this list, and I think on the back, let's just give... where's Vicky Burris? Is Vicky Burris listed in this too? Let's see her name on it. But basically through these different folks, you know, this, it gives you some connections. My contact now at the Attorney General is Josh Lorick on the back there, and he's been awesome. We're in the process of, again, trying to coordinate some faith-based training, and we're not going to give up. We're going to keep going after it, and maybe, slowly but surely we'll start to get in there. The other sheets behind it, I just put in there one of my devotionals, Caught the Thoughts Captive, the Purpose-Driven Life Today Daily Devotional. That's a great encouragement, and that one was pretty powerful. And I'm dealing with the mental part, because if we let our minds go a certain direction, then we're going to have actions will act out that. I included also a strategy starting this month in our state. We're having Domestic Violence Awareness Month. And actually, that's a national thing, but the date that I'm thinking about is in October 5th is going to be Sunday National Awareness. And since we're going to have a church-wide faith leaders priority in the churches to bring up, and we're going to have sermons made up and send out those sermons, so those that don't know where to even begin on such a topic can have a sermon to use on that Sunday. My heart is that this is something that shouldn't just be, again, a month and a year to think about, but at least it gets in their minds, and it's a way that you could actually have a chance to bring it to your faith group. By the way, our state right now on the 1st of October has a thing called Silent Witness, where they bring out, I guess, a cutout, like a person cutout, pinks or now blues, representing all the people who were killed over the last year. And so it gets of 08, it was 07 folks, of 07 was 06 folks. And I think we hit 50 people. And there were more blues for some of the reasons I mentioned. Some were actual, but you know, more blues there. There were some children. And the Attorney General reads out a short story of each victim as they bring out that cutout. And that imagery on the state capitol steps is amazing. But the stories behind those is incredible. Again, a reminder, if you again want to get into it, understand what's going on, he always brings out this comment. As we sit here and look at these images, before it happens next year, we're going to have another meeting. And unfortunately, I'm going to get a whole bunch more names to add to this call out. And I'm going to have a big list again. And some of these people are alive right now. What are you doing to help minister to? What are you helping to do to serve to? What are you helping to do to protect these folks? And that always...
Whew.
ask a quick question?
Yes, ma'am.
Over this. One of the things is when you're talking to the person being abused, do emphasize that the marriage covenant is broken by the violence from her partner. And what scripture verse, what scriptures, because some of the women that we know will say, you know, the only thing I see in scripture is adultery, marital unfaithfulness. Mm-hmm. I don't see a scripture that he's breaking the covenant by abusing me. So what scripture do you give to these women that the covenant...
That's good. I don't have that in my mind right now.
Colossians 3:19.
Yeah, was that the one that was up there? 3:19, I'm trying to remember what it was, but that was the one that we just had used in that one slide. I apologize, my mind went... But yeah, what I can do is do me a favor.
But we're supposed to, my husband is supposed to love the wife like Jesus loves the church. Mm-hmm. And Jesus did not abuse the church.
Yeah, I mean, basically all the scriptures that talk about how we're supposed to treat the wife, how we're supposed to be a part of it. I mean, you don't have the option for the abuse side of it. So, I mean, what this gets into is again, the obey, the you know, you're supposed to obey me, submit. That's the one that the domestic violence is right. And the perpetrators take the word submit and push it into this level of control and destroy.
1 Corinthians 7, Ephesians 6.
But where I'm getting is what we've got to be careful of is taking scripture and making it used for the destructive side of it. And that's what, unfortunately, and unfortunately some of our ministers are taking them, saying, go back to your home. You know, you should be submitting to him. You know, it's not like, you know, don't run away from him. You're not supposed to get divorced like you said. Go ahead.
6 and 9.
Ephesians 6, yeah.
That's a real good one. And he masters do the same things unto them, forbearing threats.
Mm-hmm. Once you understand that, then you know the type of love he's talking about.
Exactly. And by the way, I won't do the start gym thought. No, I'm not, because every professor you've ever had probably did this to you. I won't read the syllabus, but go through this and like I said, I pulled out either things from Faith Trust Institute or from our coalition that put these materials together. And this is just a piece of some of the information I've got up here. And I didn't stuff it in the brochures, but one of our organizations, and I'm not familiar how national, but it's called Sister Care in our area. Talks about their services. If you want to grab a copy of that brochure, you may. And one of our organizations that's involved with Family Violence Intervention Program, I mean, it's a 26-week program that they do to meet with the perpetrators. These programs, by the way, just to give you a quick thought on that as we close out, these programs are very, in fact, the one that called them in, you don't get to miss without some kind of excuse. I mean, it's very documented, and if they break that commitment to it, I mean, they may have to start the whole program over again. But they also have to go back to the judge, because usually when they're going through a program, it's part of instead of going to prison. I mean, so these guys have to commit to this. And this is not an easy thing. What they're committing to is a change, and not all want to make that change. Not all think they need to make a change. But I've been appreciative that there are programs out there that are helping in that. I also pull this stuff off here. I also set up, just in case you wanted to see what was done, this was a domestic violence and coordinated community community response. This was geared towards both the the faith group, and also but predominantly towards the law end of it. They included PowerPoints, but you know, when it came down to the issue of the crimes that they showed, again, it's just amazing the impact it's having on families. You know, if there is an aspect that I'm hoping to get across here, is that we need to start praying about our opportunity first. It's kind of like Linnell brought out to us today, I think, and I really appreciate your words. You've got to kind of let these eyes and ears that you have now be transformed to be able to see and hear these cries, to be able to understand the hurt that's all around you, and then have a heart that's transformed to be able to be broken enough to know, and a mind now that's transformed to know how to help. So there's this transformation process that I believe God does in your heart to be able to minister like this. And if you're not called to be on that front line of it, you may be called, like you're saying, you know, other ways to get to minister in this avenue. By the way, this is a team. This pray that no one walks out of here thinking, I'm going to do this now. If you do this, you need to get a healthy team of people involved with this. And it's going to kind of cover all the arenas that you can imagine. I definitely encourage you, as another starting point, though, to see if you have a faith advisory council already existing in your state, because that group will probably be very helpful. And ours, I know, would be glad to be able to encourage you. We're getting ready to produce a piece that would probably be translated easily into each state that will be geared towards the faith leaders' help type notebook. So if that's something that you would like also, again, I can send it to you. I believe our goal is to get that done so we can use it within this awareness month coming up in October. By the way, this is April still, we are in sexual assault month, if that means anything. This April is sexual assault, so if you didn't notice it, next year you can probably be alert to this. Your community is doing issues or addressing the issue of sexual assault usually during this month, since that's another national issue month. I believe we're at that point. About 6 more minutes. Any other questions? Things that I didn't get to give you or encourage you on?
So one of the things that in our local community has done is at the courthouse, on the trees around the courthouse lawn, they tied a blue ribbon on for each reported case of child abuse.
Mm.
And my kids, when we've passed by, they've asked, "Mom, what are all those blue ribbons?" And I've had to tell them what it is.
Wow.
And they've been attentive to the fact that there are so many. So that might be even during that October month to do at the church in that surrounding community.
See,
reports of domestic violence, so that people are aware, and it's a visual reminder for the whole month.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not something in a church bulletin. It is present for cars driving by.
Exactly.
People walking in.
And what you just hit on is, it may not be the big red sign, but the simple ribbon element,
right,
would draw in, hey, what's that for?
Mm-hmm.
We've got to move into the awareness building plan. We learn as kind of the front line in the ministry, whether our staff or lay leader, a lot of things, and we take for granted that our community that we're in has got it too. But they're missing it. They don't know the signs. They don't know the concerns. They don't realize the critical issues. And they also, if they're the ones in the crisis, they don't realize the answers and solutions, the healing opportunities. And they also don't realize, unfortunately, too, that a lot of times our faith organizations do care, but they don't see anything like this, like the ribbons. By the way, if you were one who was a victim, and you got it, you understood what was happening, that almost would be a beacon to say, we care. Wouldn't that be sweet? That would be awesome.
If you had to give us a statement or one word to help solve this problem, what that would be?
Pray. Get together with someone who's already been down this road ahead of you. Get a mentor, like I said, either myself or some others. Design that plan with that person. But in the part of the pray and the design, make sure you have a team that's in that plan. I would also, this is a crazy thought, partner with other churches and faith organizations. Because if you see the need, they may have seen it, but they didn't know what to do, and coming together makes it a lot easier. And for the sake of those that are of the same faith, wouldn't that be an awesome kingdom builder? Once plan's set, once everything's, you see what your call is, make sure the plan gets activated. And it's not, and you didn't just get a file and a folder that you put in your bookcase. I fear, and I know it because I have some of those files and folders like these handed out, that will go into some cabinet and it won't get used at all. So activate the plan by then starting out. And then, by the way, this is huge. Your pastor or your head faith leader has to be involved with this plan.
Sometimes you put a plan towards them and they just lay back.
Right. But if the pastor's involved, then he can bring it to the pulpit. And for those who are, for other denominations, she can bring it to the pulpit. Both of them can get that word out and show that it's something that's important to us as a church. And then help also in making, maybe he or she has those community relations too that you don't have. So again, the activation of this takes many people, starting with prayer, working with those experienced, getting the pastor's support, and then bring it to life and getting out there. And by the way, failure is inevitable.
Participate.
Yeah, but what I'm getting is failure is going to happen. Things aren't going to work. Someone's going to complain. Someone thinks we don't want it. Then guess what? When you're succeeding, I'm sorry, who are these people that are sitting over here? There's going to be uncomfortableness because the crisis isn't pretty. The crisis isn't come dressed like we dress. The crisis is not an easy thing, and they don't have any boundaries. So they come up to you, they talk to you, they stand really close to you. They're hurting. They don't come at the normal office hours. I mean, so as an organization, as a church, as a faith leader, you've got to be ready beyond the 9-to-5 of ministry and the Sunday, Wednesday thinking. That's that thing they sold me on when I first started. So I'm going to close in prayer because I want to be good on time. Lord, I thank you so much. I thank you for the honor to share, but I feel like there is already a team in this room that you have worked in each of their lives and hearts. Unfortunately, you've broken their hearts, and not so much you, but their hearts have been broken through this crisis. I believe you have been the protector. I believe you've been the healer. I believe that you have also been the sustainer. And I believe you're the one who gives us the hope. And each one of these people, these men and women, you have been that for them or for those that they minister to. And I know it's not going to stop. Both what you provide and unfortunately what Satan's going to open the door for more opportunities, even down to our youngest of our kids that are beginning to see this might not be a bad thing to act like this. What it can be gaining, what control gives them. Lord, let us be strong witnesses on this. And Lord, I give over the plans and ideas that you may be working in each of these men and women's heart and ask that you honor it, guide them in it, and let them see you at the core of it. And if it's not of you, Lord, that they just step away and wait till the next time when it's your call. Yes. I look forward to what's next and also next time we meet. In your name, amen.
Thank you. The 7 signs for protecting our children that you have up there.